Tech of Sports, episode 50, adventurer and author Shane Lewis. Tonight on the Tech of Sports, Shane Lewis. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android, and don't forget the Stitcher radio app for all iOS devices, Android, and BlackBerry. Get Stitcher for free with all your favorite Netcast show studio shows preloaded. And Stitcher Radio, it's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. The Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. You can join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room and listen to the show live. To welcome all the listeners this week and tonight, and we're going to have some fun and a real interesting guest. And we're literally going to go off the grid tonight with Shane Lewis. He's an adventurer, self-described adrenaline junkie, a survivor. He came out of, as a youth, 5 foster homes, 4 institutional boarding schools, and every obstacle you can imagine. He's now globetrotting our world, being an extreme athlete, and in every sense of the word, and he never loses perspective. He's always learning about himself and life along the way, and he's got a great book out. It's Growing Up, Institutionalized to Globetrotting, and the book details his life and all his adventures, and it's received a bunch of 5-star reviews. I wholeheartedly recommend it. And Shane, great seeing you. Great having you tonight. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, guys. My pleasure.
Yeah, episode. You're the lucky episode 50 guest. So this is the 50th show, and glad to have you on. And I guess tell the listeners a little about yourself and just kind of describe what you do and what you have going on.
Yeah, awesome. I had a hard childhood, grew up in the foster homes and boarding schools, like you said, and then decided that I wanted to experience the world because I felt that life had taken so much away from me when I was young that I was going to take life back. And then I got addicted to traveling around the world, and then, just went from there. You started traveling and seeing different countries, and then I was like, wow, let me try a different sport. Let me go underwater, learn how to scuba dive. And, you know, then it was like, wow, the mountains are beautiful. I want to get up in the Himalayas. Let me learn how to rock climb and ice climb. And, you know, and then I went to Australia for a few months and tried to learn how to surf. And I'm such a type A alpha personality that, you know, the harder something is, the more I'm going to work at it to try to learn it. And surfing really kicked my butt for a while. So I spent, you know, months and months and months in Hawaii learning how to surf and then learn how to skydive. And so it's just been a lot of fun. I just got off filming Discovery Channel's Naked and Afraid. I will be the premiere episode this Sunday night on Discovery Channel. So we're looking forward to having some fun. So.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing that. And this is a way of life for you. I mean, you talk about months learning how to surf. To some people, that's fun and vacation. But you take all this seriously, don't you?
Yeah, I do take it seriously because, you know, it is fun for me. But I don't call myself a tourist. I call myself a traveler. And mostly I'm a cultural immersionist. So I'll drop myself into a continent for 5 or 6 months and then, you know, learn how to do something. And then when I was in Hawaii, I was actually surfing for 9 hours a day, 6 days a week. I mean, that's all I did was surf 5 months. You know, I was on the beach, my board at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I left at, you know, 5 o'clock at night, or, you know, and I was just in the water as much as possible learning. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a vacation, I guess, but it is work. I mean, I am working very hard to learn the things that I want to learn, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people that want to learn a foreign language, they say the best way to learn it is to just go there and immerse yourself in the language and the culture. And that's kind of what you're doing with adventures and extreme sports and those type of things, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. I don't want to Photoshop myself in or take pictures of me standing at the Eiffel Tower and all of these, you know, amazing places around the world, because then you can just Photoshop yourself into the picture. I want to learn how the people eat and how they live and what their daily struggles are like. You know, I take third class trains if I'm in third world countries, and I don't take first class travel anywhere. And, you know, I'm trying to learn what my planet is like, you know, what my fellow, you know, earthlings are living like.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people, they'll just say in passing or in conversation, oh, I'd like to go and live in a certain country or a third world country. And, you know, they never end up doing it. What makes you different? You know, you talk about it, but then you back it up. Is that something you've always, kind of a credo you've always lived by?
Yeah, I do. If I like something, if I say something's beautiful, or if I look at something that catches my attention or mesmerizes me, I want to go experience it. It's not good enough for me to watch it on television. It's not good enough for me to read it in a book. I'm like, wow, if that's amazing, I want to know what it feels like. I want to know what it smells like. I want to know what it tastes like, you know? And I've got a very high standard to myself. You know, I'm very convicted to, you know, the things that I do. And if I'm going to do something, it's going to be 100%. I'm not going to halfway do it. You know, it's just my personality.
Yeah, and people appreciate that, and I'm sure your fans do, and people that'll be watching the show, they'll see that firsthand. This is the Tech of Sports is the show here, so we'll just kind of talk about technology, how you use it, how it's changed since you've been traveling the world, and how tech savvy would you call yourself?
I'm becoming more tech savvy. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not a troglodyte, but you know, I'm not into the modern era of all of this computer stuff and, you know, bouncing around. I mean, I've got a smartphone to do my stuff, but what I really appreciate is, you know, when I go out to climbing zones and climbing places around the world and I see the equipment that these guys used back in the 50s and the 60s, I'm like, wow, I would be a terrible climber back then because I just don't know if I would have the internal strength to do the things that they do. I mean, I've got, you know, titanium ice axes and, you know, aluminum picks and things like that. And it's just, you know, I've got ice screws instead of pitons and they're hollow and they've got, you know, quick releases on them and stuff. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I would be as hardcore about it as I, you know, if I had to climb with that gear that they did back then.
That's how it is. I talk to athletes and coaches and people in all sports, and they all kind of look back, even in whatever sport they're in. And, you know, golfers will look back and say, how did they play with hickory shafted clubs? And tennis players will look back and say, how did they play with wood rackets? And football players will look back and say, how did they play with, you know, leather helmets? So you're looking at it in the same way. But what about electronics, gadgets, mobile technology? Do you kind of look at that as in maybe a different way than the average guy on the street? Because maybe technology like that could end up saving your life someday.
Yeah, I have some friends that have died ice climbing, and I don't understand why they didn't have GPS, avalanche transceivers and stuff with them. And so, yeah, the technology is very important. I mean, we need that equipment to figure out where we are and where we're going. And as much as I don't like to use GPSs, you know, I mean, I've been in the Himalayas, I've been in Tibet, you know, and up in the mountains, and you can get lost pretty quick. And you can get lost scuba diving underwater if you lose your bearings. I mean, that's a very claustrophobic feeling. You drop down 50, 60 feet, and there's nothing but blue water all the way around you. So you do need some kind of, you know, technology to help you figure out where rocks are and where formations are, and topography of your environment is very, very helpful. It's very knowledgeable to have that information. So I do have a lot of, you know, technical equipment, but it does help. It does help a lot.
And we're talking with Shane Lewis here, adventurer and extreme athlete and just an all-around amazing guy. And Shane, the technology you use, are you always kind of looking for something new and something better? I realize, you know, everybody's on a budget, but are you always, you get approached from companies wanting you maybe to try something, let them know what you think, because you're able to test things out in some really extreme conditions, whether it be cold or heat or elevations. Is that you get people wanting to get your opinion on certain things?
Yeah, I get some companies that want me to try out their products, and I'm disappointed with some of the mainstream companies. I think that they have lost the quality of their equipment over the last few years. They're catering for the money and not really the athlete anymore, and at least not the hardcore athlete. And so me and my friends are starting to branch out into alternative companies and products. Like my ice climbing bib is a fisherman's, you know, deep water fisherman's bib, because it's the only product that I think is got high quality to it. So it's very interesting how things have changed, you know, with the money and the economics and the economy downturn. And I have tested out a few products. I've written some letters to, you know, Suunto to ask them if they could make a watch that's for skydiving as well as scuba diving as well as for high altitude. Because if I travel somewhere, because I do all of those sports, I have to bring $3,000 watches, three separate $1,000 watches with me. Can't somebody make one that does all three? Some of us are pretty intense people and we do all of these sports, you know.
What about clothing? In extreme conditions, whether it be cold, ice, wind, that type of thing, have you always been prepared for what you've encountered, or is it kind of trial and error and you've underestimated sometimes?
I have definitely underestimated sometimes, and then there are times where you get real cocky and confident, and then you know, you pay the price for that as well. The first couple of times I made those big continental treks, I had too much gear with me, and then I stripped down a little bit more, and I've got it down to a science now for all different climates. When I went to Asia for 6 months, I had all the climates with me, and my backpack only weighed 24 pounds, and I was not cold in any environment, even at, you know, 22.5 in Tibet, so it was just absolutely beautiful. The one thing I didn't do is I used to bring this comprehensive first aid kit with me, and I didn't bring it on that trip, and I tore my legs apart on a coral reef surfing in, you know, one of smaller islands in Indonesia, and actually needed a first aid kit. So that was a hard lesson to learn there. So,
yeah, I was gonna ask you, what's in your first aid kit?
I used to have everything, and then I took it out for that trip and had nothing. I have, I've got just a standard Band-Aids, bandages, you know, some bacitracin, some things like that. But, and also I've learned that when you drop into a third world country, you can get a lot of stuff over the counter that you can't get in the States. So I'll buy like powdered penicillin so I can make a paste out of it and put it on some kind of laceration that I might acquire when I'm backpacking somewhere. Those are little helpful hints that I've learned along the way.
Yeah, good advice. And we're with Shane Lewis here in Chandler. We're just going to take a break here for a minute while I speak about Amazon.com, who's a supporter here of the show and an affiliate. And you can use the affiliate link here at the studio, netcaststudio.com/Amazon, for all your shopping needs. There's no extra cost to you. It's easy just to log on to netcaststudio.com/Amazon, and it helps support the studio here. And your book, of course, is available on Amazon in print or Kindle form. I recommend everyone to take a look at Growing Up Institutionalized to Globetrotting. Talk about that here in a second, but it's a great read. And you know, with Amazon, we have weddings and birthdays coming up this summer. Back to school into the fall. So just use the affiliate link here, netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And Shane, thanks for holding on there. And what's the reaction? I'm always curious. What's the reaction you get from other people when you kind of tell them what you do and what you've done? And are they impressed, or do they think you got a screw loose?
I get both. The biggest reaction I get is denial. People are just like, that's not possible that you can do all of that. And I'm like, well, here's the website. And I used to carry around my passport with me because I would be at the gas station and people would be like, no, you're not telling the truth. It's not possible. Because I have a big jacked up, you know, monster Jeep Wrangler, and I've got a sticker on it from every country I've ever been to. And I've got my website on the back. And, you know, it wasn't really to put it in your face and be arrogant about it. It was like a conversation piece, you know, that a normal guy is doing this. I'm not rich. I'm not wealthy. I'm not from the upper class. I'm not, you know, famous or anything. I'm just a normal guy who's, you know, addicted to having fun and going around. And so I get that. And then I get other people who are like, yeah, you're absolutely crazy because, you know, you jump out of perfectly good airplanes and you want to go into the middle of, you know, Cambodia and go hiking on the rice terraces. And, you know, but then they look at the pictures and the videos like, wow, that's amazing. And I don't understand how someone can say that is amazing and not and have absolutely no desire to experience it. That to me is mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling to you, but to them, it's you know, it's something they maybe think about. But you know, people really have to be motivated, really have to get that in their mind if they ever really want to attempt things like that. You've had that ability. You would probably say most people don't.
I would think, yeah, I would agree that most people don't, and it doesn't make me a better person. I mean, my original reason for traveling was to become a better human being, to be, you know, less selfish and more respectful of the different environments around the world, and then it has really helped me become a much better human being, especially, you know, the trials and tribulations that I've had to deal with in third world countries and meeting people and becoming great friends with people who have actually, you know, who have absolutely nothing and they're amazing humans.
Yeah, we'll talk about a couple stories here in a second, but we'll talk about your book here right now. And was the book kind of a labor of love? Was it kind of therapeutic for you to do?
Yeah, I felt at the time when I started writing it, you know, I was turning 40 years old and I thought maybe I'd like to close this part of my life and move on, because it's always been this kind of baggage that I've carried around with me. You know, I mean, there's scar tissues from everything, no matter how hard we try and, you know, how much we mature and we grow up, you know, life leaves scars on you. So I wrote it as a cathartic, you know, to just, you know, get it out, get my side of the version, you know, out, that, you know, people like to talk about me, but not to me. And I've never been outspoken. I've sort of just eaten everything and, you know, instead of, you know, getting frustrated about it. So that's why I wrote it, was just to, you know, just let it all out and then get it out of my system and then, you know, move on. And my life has changed drastically since I wrote it, which is kind of funny. So.
Yeah, that's how things go. People keep evolving, but I'm sure you're pleased with the reviews the book got and kind of the comments that people have left that have read it. That's got to make you feel good.
Yeah, it does make me feel good. The only thing I may end up doing a comment myself, is the readers seem to be making how difficult the first half of the book is to read. But when you're moving around from 5 foster homes and 4 institutions in 13 years, I wrote it in that sort of chaotic style so that the reader could feel how chaotic my life was. You know, if I write it in a smooth style, it's not quite as powerful as, or as, you know, as dramatic. I wrote it in that chaos of you know, everything happening and being blitzkrieged by everything at the same time, you know? It's a little ADD on purpose.
Yeah, you kind of had a haphazard childhood. And I always, when I travel, I like to see the reactions of the, not the local adults, but I like to see the reactions of the local kids that live in that area. That kind of gives you, it always tells me an indication of you know, what that area has to offer and how people like living in wherever that part of the world or part of the country is. You have any good stories to tell about, you know, encountering and interactions with kids in the various places you've been?
Yeah, I can give you two that are really amazing. I was in Malawi, and then I tried to wash my clothes in Zimbabwe by my hand, and I didn't do a very good job, and so I paid these ladies to wash my clothes in Malawi, and then they brought my clothes back, and they were spotless, and I was like, wow, can you take me down and teach me how to wash my clothes by hand? So I went with them, and I got to play with their kids all day long, and, you know, all the kids running around, and they were afraid to run up my body and do flips, because I'm a really tall guy, so kids like to play on me like a jungle gym, and that one of the kids said, I don't want to run up your body because I might get your clothes dirty, because he was so dirty and his clothes were tore off. We're in the middle of, you know, a very poor area of Malawi. And I love that he was, you know, they had enough respect to say, is it okay if I get you dirty because I really want to play with you? And I thought that was really cool. And then I got one more story in crossing the borders into Uganda, also in Africa as well, the trip. And we were playing hacky sack, waiting for the ferry to come across. And it was just, you know, the tour group of us were just playing hacky sack. And the kids came over, the school bus kids, and, you know, all in their blue uniforms and everything, and they had never seen a hacky sack before, and they played with us, and after like two rotations, they were really good at it, because they're all very good football players, soccer players, and then so one of the girls came up to me, and she asked me for the hacky sack, and I didn't give it to her, because it was the early part of my trip, and that's all I have for my entertainment, but the look on her face broke my heart so badly that 5 minutes later on the ferry, I just walked over to her, and I gave her the hacky sack, and I was like, here, it's yours, you keep it, I mean, you're going to love it more than I will, so...
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly kids pick up things, and I'm sure also in your travels you've had mishaps along the way. Maybe give one or two little reactions where maybe you were in a bad spot or having a bad run at things, and you considered heading back home. Do you have any stories to tell that, you know, when things got so bad you were ready to pack it in, but with your attitude and yeah, the way you go about things, that wasn't really an option for you?
Yeah, first one would be that Asia trip really took a lot out of me. Up until then, I'd had a lot of good times, and I've had a few things, but I lost 32 pounds in 28 days across India from dysentery, and I just had to keep going, you know, and just because I knew once I got to Tibet and Nepal, it would be so much more beautiful and so much better, and I just had to struggle through it, and it was just, I was sick, and you know, I had to get on third-class trains and buses to get around, and it was really difficult. And then Christmas Eve 2010, I was in Thailand to see the full moon party, because they had a full moon lunar eclipse at midnight on New Year's Eve night, so I was in Thailand for that whole month. And then I got food poisoning from barracuda on the beach, and I thought I was going to die. I mean, I had hallucinations of death, and I was laying in my bed, and I had to go into the shower and pour hot water on me. And one time I prayed to, you know, to God, I'm like, wow, this is it. You're going to take me. And I woke up the next morning, and because I had the mosquito net on me, it was a very euphoric, angelic moment. I actually thought I was dead for a couple of seconds. I was like, whoa. And then I was like, no, I feel pretty good. I'm starting to get a little bit of energy. Okay. I think I'm okay. And the funny thing about that one is, the people that were taking care of my lodge and the whole bungalows that were along the water, they actually bet who was going to go get me in 2 days, because they thought I was going to be dead in 2 days when they first saw me.
Well, that's because you're the first person that's ever told me they got food poisoning from barracuda.
Yeah, apparently a certain time of year it has to be caught a certain way on the beach. And then, you know, I didn't realize that, but I was deathly ill. I was green, and I tried to drink Gatorade to get some electrolytes, and it came out like within seconds. I just, you know, I was so sick. I honestly thought I wasn't going to be able to make it.
Yeah, did you ever have to go visit a medic or a hospital in a far off place somewhere that you never thought you would be in?
Yeah, I was in Bali when I tore up my ankles and my shins on the coral reef, and I went in to go get some penicillin and get a wrap and get some clean water and some iodine to try to keep the infection out, because it was like 36 hours for me to get home or something. I didn't want to get an infection between having exposed to all the flights and the dirtiness, sure, and stuff. So that way, I went into like one of those little green plus stores talked to the pharmacist and the doctor in there for like 20 minutes when I was in Bali.
What about how you were treated in various corners of the world being an American? pretty good treatment and reactions from people, or you get a lot of questions about things? And
I'm a very honest guy, Rick, so I'm going to give you a very honest answer. When I first started traveling around the world in the early 2000s, everything was amazing. Everybody loved us. And then, you know, I'm not going to bring politics into this one. I'm not going to talk about my politics or anything. But when George Bush, you know, started the issues in the war and things like that, the world hated us. I mean, they were rude and nasty to me for a few years. And then when I went to Asia, it's like people couldn't even speak English. They were putting thumbs up going, Obama, 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 when they saw me. And I was like, wow, the whole culture of the way the world views us is changing simply because the president changed. That's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the media partly has something to do with that.
Well, of course, we've got propaganda everywhere in the world. Yeah, I mean, they twist everything around, I'm sure. But I'm just giving you my experience. I'm not bringing politics into it. What my experience was.
No, that's what we want. We're here with Shane Lewis. And Shane, if people want to follow what you're doing on social media or they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
I've got a blog, shaneoffthegrid.com. I record everything I do because most people lie about the things that they do, and I've got a lot of flack about it. So I live with a GoPro camera. I mean, it's on the front of my surfboard. I take it in my helmet camera when I'm climbing, and I live with it. So I record everything I do. There's 6,000-plus pictures and 300-plus videos on the website. And you know, you can link up from there and check everything out and link from Facebook from there. I have a Facebook account, and it's going to be a little bit hectic for the next couple of weeks because I'm airing in that TV show on Sunday night. I am the star of the premiere episode, so we're pretty stoked about that as far as, you know, what's going to happen with my life.
Sure. Great exposure. What's one place that still remains on your bucket list that you haven't been to?
That's a very good question. Patagonia and Easter Island are on my bucket list. I mean, I've been on every continent but Antarctica, and Antarctica is also on my bucket list, but Patagonia and Easter Island, I really want to go. I really want to do that. There's three trips in the world that I would love to do. One is to land in Croatia and then spend a little time in you know, that area, and then take the train from Moscow to Siberia over to Trans-Siberian, and then backpack in across the Bering Strait and then bound down through Alaska for like 4 or 5 months. And I'd also like to start off in Peru and do the entire South American loop all the way down to, you know, Chile and Easter Island, and then Patagonia and come back up the backside to you know, Brazil and end up that way and coming back across to Peru. Those are amazing things that I'd really like to get accomplished. But, you know, I'm getting old and I don't have the finances that I used to have, you know, back in the day when I was, you know, just running around. But, you know, hopefully some exposure and somebody may want to sponsor me so I can have some fun.
Yeah, I was figuring you were going to say Antarctica, but I'm sure there's some other places. Have you been to Madagascar?
No, I didn't get to Madagascar when I was in Africa. I did 11 countries and 28,000 kilometers across the African continent. I mean, the world's a big place. I mean, Galapagos Islands I would love to go to. You know, it's just, the world's a big place. I've seen a lot, but, you know, when I look at a map on my, I have a big map in my apartment. It's like 8 feet wide. And when I look at all the dots on it, I realize that as much as I've seen, I've still only seen like a third of the planet. And it's like, wow, you know.
You have a count of how many countries you've been to?
Yeah, I've been to 72 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a good number, but like you said, you're probably only a third of the way there.
Yeah, and as far as like, and not just that, but they're congregated in small areas. So when you get into like, when you look at the map and see like Upper Russia and Mongolia, and it's this vast wasteland that I haven't been to, it's like, wow, that's, I would probably enjoy backpacking to Mongolia for a few months, but the world is a really big place, you know?
Absolutely. We here in this country, we're very American centric. So you've seen more than most Americans, most families combined have ever seen. So it's just amazing. What's I always wrap up here with my guest asking them one last question. What's the one gadget or piece of technology that you can't live without, either in your personal life or your travels? What's one thing you wouldn't want to not have with you?
I have a scuba diving computer, which does a lot of things. It has two clocks on it, so I can always keep track of what time it is while I'm home, as well as where the place that I'm in on the road. And it has a dual alarm system, and usually I'm scuba diving somewhere. So it has weather on it as well. It tells me the temperature of where, you know, the area that I'm in. And I could not live without that thing. I really rely on that a lot.
Yeah, first person to say that gadget in 50 episodes. That's great. And Shane, give the listeners one more time where they can see what you got going on, and just talk about the Discovery, what you can say about the Discovery Channel episode coming up.
Sure, yeah, you can check me out. I'm shaneoffthegrid.com. I've got a full website. I don't put any ads on it, so you don't have to worry about, you know, having to pay for ads or whatever. I put it up there because I don't think people should have to pay to see how beautiful the world is. This Sunday night, I am premiering in the new reality show called Naked and Afraid, and they took a couple, a male and female, who did not know each other, weren't allowed to meet each other, weren't allowed to talk to each other until day of filming. They dropped six different couples in this situation and different remote locations around the world, and my location with Kim was Costa Rica, and we had to survive for 21 days without food, without clothes, and without anything. They just got a four-person camera crew that said, you know, make your own clothes, catch and cook your own food, build your own lodging, and we'll see how well you survive. And they gave us 4 days' warning of where the location was going to be. So it's definitely trial by fire, and it is awesome. And, you know, if you're sick of real fake reality shows, then check it out. I mean, it's very raw, and it's real, and it's hardcore, and it's not for the faint of heart, but it is amazing.
This is not American Idol or Dancing with the Stars, that's for sure.
No, there's nothing staged and nothing promoed, and it's very raw. And I mean, I almost died a couple times in the same day, came very close to death, and it's very intense. It's very, very intense.
Shane, we're looking forward to it. The show has gotten some good press and a lot of intrigue about it, so we're looking forward to checking that and checking you out on this weekend.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on, and keep up the good work of letting people know that there's real people out there who have fun traveling around the world. Get off the couch.
Sure. Shane, you're about as real as it gets. Appreciate you having you on in our 50th episode here. And since it is the 50th episode, I just want to say thanks to everyone who made the 50 episodes possible, Steve and Deb and everyone at Netcast Studio there, all my guests I've had, my wife and my mom, who never misses a show. I'm sure she'll be listening. So, Shane, safe travels to you. Be safe, and we'll check in with you soon and follow how you're doing.
Thanks, man. I appreciate your time. You guys have a great night.
No problem. And thanks to Shane and the rest of everyone at Netcast Studio that has many other shows which may be of interest to you. You can go to netcaststudio.com, check that out, and all the different content that's available, past episodes, current episodes, and streaming content. And also Two Thumbs Up Media, the podcast directory that's owned by the people at Netcast Studio. You can search a variety of shows that you unbelievable topics that you've never heard of before, and it's all great shows, and they're timely and ready for you to take a download and take a listen to. And thanks to everyone again. This has been the 50th episode of the Tech of Sports, a Netcast Studio production.